Are you seeing a picture of a parrot? Everyone see? All right. So today's subject is animals. I'm going to talk about animals today. Animals have always been an important part of God's creation, and they're such a wonderful blessing that God made the animals for us. And they have played an important role throughout all of history. It'd be hard to imagine what would things be like if it was just us and the trees, no animals. What would that be like? I guess if there were no animals and we never knew there were animals, we wouldn't know that we're missing them. But the fact that they're here and we imagine that they weren't, that would be a sad thing. So God created them with purpose, and they were based on a design. And he made sure to save them during the time of the flood. He wanted to save each and every kind of animal. And then looking ahead, as we are at this time, especially at this time of the year, but during the thousand-year period, they're part of the refreshing that God is going to be doing on this earth. He's going to be renewing and refreshing the animal kingdom as well. So he's been thinking about the animals throughout time. Now, as we go through this message today, I hope this doesn't happen to you. I'll do my part, or at least I'll try to do my part. I'm also hoping this doesn't happen is either. You're just sitting there going, meh. This is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for alertness. I'm looking for eagerness, ready to go. So let's give it a try. Let's get ready to go. So we're going to start. Let's turn to Job chapter 12. We'll begin in Job chapter 12, and we'll look at verse 7 through 10. Job 12, and we'll read verses 7 through 10. There's a very interesting verse here. I'm going to read this from the NIV. The translation shouldn't be significant. I don't believe it's significantly different from what you are reading from, but this is the translation I'm choosing for this verse. It says, "But ask the animals, and they will teach you, or the birds in the sky, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you, or let the fish in the sea inform you. Which of all of these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every creature and the breath of all mankind." So today, we're going to be asking the animals to teach us. What is it that we can learn? When you look at the pictures here, are these animals really going to teach you anything? That fish, how's that going to help you learn anything? Now, there's a picture of the chipmunk on one side. That's got to be one of my favorite animals. I really like chipmunks. They're always scurrying about and all. A little bit similar to squirrels. Now, squirrels, can you learn anything from a squirrel? Squirrels are interesting when you're driving around. They run out in the road, they stop, and then they sit there and decide, am I going this way or that way or this way or that way? And they seem to wait till the last second and then choose a direction. And as we see many, it's not uncommon for them not to quite make it. Even when I'm riding on my bike and I'm not particularly fast, squirrels dart out in front of me, and I'm really concerned one day I'm going to hit one. I think actually one did kind of kick my foot, or I kind of kicked one with my foot as I was pedaling through. I really want to avoid that. But squirrels actually are pretty smart. At least I've heard. They, especially when it comes to hiding their nuts or their store for later, squirrels have been known to pretend to hide some places so that those other squirrels who are watching them will be fooled. And it's been known that they have an order, or they have a priority for what they're storing. So they have maybe an oak, a nut from an oak tree, an acorn, that they don't care that as much about versus maybe a walnut. And they will hide the oak maybe in a place that's less hidden, I guess. Easier to find, but some highly prized treasure like maybe a walnut, they will take more care in hiding that nut. So even squirrels have something we can learn from them. All right, today we're going to look at four lessons. So again, we're going to ask the animals, and what are they going to teach us? So they're going to teach us some life lessons. They're going to teach, and we'll go through, and how God is a great creator, his power, and some about his character. So we'll start with life lessons. What can we learn from animals? So let's turn to Proverbs chapter 6, 6, and we'll read Proverbs 6, verses 6 through 8. Now, we can learn from ants. Now, don't take my word for that. Take the word of the man that's often known as the wisest man in the world. If Solomon had time and thought that you can learn from an ant, we should probably do the same. What can we learn from an ant? Now, I chose this picture, by the way. This is a cartoon picture. I have one more. Most of the pictures I have are actual photos. And I pulled these from a site that said they are royalty-free and okay to use. I hope that's true. But I used a cartoon version of the ant because I didn't want maybe a real ant that might be a little, I don't know, creepy, a little too real. So I chose this picture here of this ant, and he's doing what ants are known to do, which is steal picnic food. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. Here it says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which have no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in summer and gathers her food in the harvest." So Solomon must have been observing the ants, and he said, look at this ant. Nobody's telling them what to do, and yet they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're doing the right thing. They're taking care of themselves. They're planning ahead. Learn from that. Be wise by observing and learning from the ant. There are over 12,000 types of ants all around the world. And ants are pretty amazing from what I read. They can lift 20 times their body weight, which isn't very much because an ant doesn't weigh very much, but can you lift 20 times your body weight? I don't think so. Let's say you're a 175-pound person, which if I say that, some of you will be offended. I don't weigh that much. And some of you will be like, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. That's about me. That would be like a 175-pound person lifting 3,500 pounds or 1.5 tons. That's a lot. Be like picking up a 2013 Chevrolet Malibu, whatever that weighs. Or a large black rhino. Can you imagine picking up a large black rhino? Or how about not one, but two Kodiak bears? That's how strong an ant is in relative terms. And they also do prepare for winter, like a lot of the animals. They shift their diets around to carbohydrates that can be stored up for when the winter and harsher weather comes. So there are things about ants that we can learn from them. You know, have you ever seen an ant just relaxing? Ants are always on the move. And a lot of times they're marching in a line, but they're always moving back and forth, going this way and going that way. These are things we can learn from. I always thought hummingbirds were on the move, but when we moved into our house, we have at least one type of at least one hummingbird who sits in a tree, and I'm really surprised by that. But you can learn from a hummingbird and actually learn a bad lesson, because the hummingbird we have sits in the tree and waits until there's another hummingbird that comes to our feeder, and then that hummingbird dives off of its branch and goes straight for the feeder and chases the other bird away, and then goes back to its perch, waiting. So we have some lazy but and unsharing hummingbirds in our yard. So let's continue. So let's look at Proverbs chapter 30. There's a couple chapters that we're going to get to, Proverbs 30 being one of them, that talk a lot about animals. Now, if you want to find the verses in the chapters that talk the most about animals, of course, those are the chapters that cover the clean and unclean meats. But there are some other chapters that have a lot to say and use animals as the reading is teaching us. So we're going to look at Proverbs chapter 30. We'll start in verse 18. And we'll read several verses here in Proverbs 30. Proverbs 30, 18 starts, it says, "There are three things which are too wonderful for me, yes, four which I do not understand, the way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent on a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a virgin." Ever see a snake crawling across a rock? How does it do it? It's amazing. I mean, of course, scientists can figure it out. You can study and you can kind of say, okay, they do this and this. But it's just an amazing thing how a snake moves across the ground or across a smooth rock. And an eagle soaring in air. What a beautiful thing. And it can just basically float there, seemingly, in the air, catching the breeze. What an incredible thing. Dropping down to verse 24, it says, "There are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are not a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. The rock badgers are a feeble folk, yet they make their homes in crags. The locusts have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. The spider skillfully grasps with its hands, and it is in king's palaces. So here are these, in these verses, it talks about animals that are feeble and weak, and yet they are wise. We can learn some things from these animals and how they are preparing, how they are marching in order. Continuing on, verse 29. There are three things which are majestic in pace, four which are stately in walk. A lion which is mighty among the beasts and does not turn away from any. A greyhound, a male goat also, and a king whose troops are with him. Lions really are stately. I like this picture a lot. In fact, I'll bring it back a little bit later because it's so cool. It is what a lion, and is just there is just majesty in its look. The animals that God created are all around us. We should be taking the time to observe, to appreciate them, but also to learn from them. I came across an article, it's titled Lessons Learned from Animals by Mohammed Naiz. It was published in 2019. So he talks about some things that we can learn from lessons. So let me go through some of the things that were in this article. We can learn to be watchful, alert, and focused. Consider prairie dogs and what good observers they are. They poke their heads out of their holes and they're looking around. Is there trouble? Is there trouble? Is it safe? And of course, whenever they spot something that they consider to be trouble, they dart underground. So they are always watchful. They're curious but cautious, and they're scanning and darting around and helping their friends to be safe. I mentioned eagles already. Eagles have very sharp vision, so they scan situations even when they're soaring up on high. So they are alert, they are focused. A cheetah, speaking of focus, displays remarkable concentration as they are on the hunt for some prey. So we can learn to be watchful by observing the animals. We can learn that we need to be focused and alert by observing how the animals behave. Maintaining order and discipline. The article talks about how geese form in a V formation. It's called a skein. A skein, I've never heard that before, but when they're flying, especially during migration, they fly in a pattern. How do they know how to do this? But what can we learn to this? We can learn that there's discipline, and we know that we need to have discipline in our lives. Honeybees display incredible order and discipline as they work together in a very organized manner. Wolves packs have a leader, and the rest follow. They are organized. We can learn from this. We can see that there needs to be order, and leadership is important. How about persistence? Can we observe animals and understand that we need to be persistent? Consider spiders and how hard they work to build their webs. What a difficult task it is. It's especially difficult for spiders that have to spell out words in their webs. Spiders that have to spell humble, radiant, terrific, or some pig. What was the name of that spider that spelled those out? Charlotte, that's right. We can also learn not to listen to a sheep when trying to spell words. It doesn't work very well. But they're webs. I just noticed this when I was pulling out of my driveway on the way to church here. A spider had built some sort of web across my driveway, which is probably 20 feet across, from high up in the evergreen trees or shrubs all the way over to my house. It's incredible, but often these webs, and we probably do it ourselves, we destroy the web in the morning. The spider persistently comes back the next day and puts it back. We can learn persistence that way. This is an interesting one that the article called out. We can believe that all things are possible. So where did this come from? Well, the article talked about butterflies. How small and delicate and light a butterfly is, and yet a butterfly travels thousands and thousands of miles in its migration pattern. that seems impossible for a butterfly to do that. But God created them to do that. He put it in their cells, in their DNA, whatever it is, to do these things. If we were to look at a butterfly, it would be impossible for this to happen. And yet it does. And of course, the job that we have as Christians seems impossible as well, but not with God's help. We can learn to accept challenges. Animals sometimes live in very difficult situations. Camels live in a desert, and they say, well, this is it, and they just do their thing. We are in difficult situations at times, and it's not wrong to try to improve them, but at the same time, we need to accept the challenges that are before us. Patience. The article mentions a snail. How patient is a snail to get from one place to the other? How many of us might feel like giving up? It's not worth it. But the snail can teach us patience. So again, observe and meditate on the animals. Learn. Learn through God's nature. Learn life lessons through the animals. They will teach us that. So moving next, God is the great creator. So let's look at Genesis chapter 1, and we'll read verses 22 through 25. Genesis 1, starting in verse 20, says, "Then God said, 'Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures. Let birds fly above the earth, across the face of the firmament of the heavens.' So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abound according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, 'Be fruitful and multiply, fill the waters and the seas, let the birds multiply on the earth.' So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, 'Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth according to its kind,' and so on. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good." These pictures in the sea of so many fish, what an incredible thing. The seas, at least in places, certainly do abound with living creatures. And God made these. God created them with purpose. It says multiple times, he created them according to their kind. He had a plan, and we can see how incredible and what an amazing creator God is by observing and meditating on the animals. And as he ended this section, he saw it, and it was good. God's creation was made good because God is that great creator. Birds flying over the earth, just amazing. The great sea creatures that he made. Some of the land animals. At the bottom middle is a moose. How many of you have seen a moose in the wild? Anybody? Ah, a few, several of you. That's on my list. I haven't made that conquest yet, but I'm looking forward to that at some point in the future. The top middle is a tiger. Now, I'm going to bring a picture of a tiger back a little bit later. They're incredible animals as well. So this point, by the way, kind of blends pretty closely with the next point we'll get to in a few minutes about God's power. But in terms of what he's able to create, it's just incredible. This is a blue whale. The blue whale, well, or sort of, I mean, it is blue, and it is kind of a whale. This is the largest. The blue whale is the largest known animal to live on the planet, including the dinosaurs. Blue whales can grow to be more than 100 feet long, which is about the length of a Boeing 737. How many people fit inside a Boeing 737? I assume everyone's flown if you haven't, but you know what an airplane's like. Jonah being inside a great fish, not saying it was a blue whale, but that's no problem. That works. We could have fit Jonah and 300 of his relatives inside a whale, no problem, right? They can weigh up to 150 tons, which is the weight of a large airplane like a Boeing 787. The heart of a whale, just the heart alone, is 400 pounds, which is about the same weight as a gorilla. So you put a gorilla inside the whale, the blue whales, and that would be an equivalent of its heart. Its tongue can weigh as much as an elephant. Elephants are huge animals, but it's just the tongue of a blue whale. Another interesting thing that I read about blue whales, they are the loudest animals on the planet. They're louder than a jet engine and can be heard up to 1,000 miles away. That's incredible. I don't know what you would hear, what sounds they're making, what they're saying, but can you imagine we're going off to the feast? Maybe you're going to Pennsylvania for the feast, and you wake up and you're like, did I close my garage door? So you walk out of your hotel, and say you have your next door neighbor's name is Margaret. So you walk out of your hotel and you say, Margaret, did I close my garage door? She's like, oh, so she goes out and looks out. Yes, have a great vacation. And you think, well, not really on vacation, but I won't bother. But that's kind of the distance we're talking about. What an incredible thing. But God created these very purposely. And we can see that. We're going to look at a couple of verses. Again, they were made according to their kind. And the Bible shows some kind of connection between the animals and the spirit world. What an incredible thing it is to consider that. First chapter of Ezekiel. We won't turn there. I'll just reference it. But this first chapter of Ezekiel is an incredible chapter describing the spirit world. Definitely read it. You can be in awe of what the spirit world is like. But in that chapter, talks about spirit beings having four wings, calves' feet, looking like a lion, looking like an ox, looking like an eagle. You see that connection. We can see another connection about the dove and the Holy Spirit. God likened the Holy Spirit to a dove. What is that connection? Why did he do that? So we will turn to Revelation chapter 4 and look at Revelation 4, verses 6 through 8. This is very similar to what was in Ezekiel, so I didn't want to ask you to turn to both places because the information is very similar. Revelation chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. Just breaking in here, it says, there were four living creatures. The first living creature was like a lion. The second was like an ox. The third had the face of like a man. The fourth was like a flying eagle. Each of the four living creatures had six wings. So what is that connection? What an interesting thing to consider, but I can't explain it. Maybe some of you understand it better than I did. I do, but we can see that there was purpose in God's creation. It wasn't haphazard. All these animals mean something. And such a wide and vast creation that he made. Let's look at Psalms chapter 19 and verse 1. Psalms 19, verse 1. Psalms 19, verse 1 says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. We can certainly see God's handiwork in the animals that he made. What an awesome thing. What a wonderful creator that we worship. This picture is a bit of a non sequitur. These are guinea pigs, I think. And the reason I put this picture here is because, well, I'll be completely open. All of you are a little bit like guinea pigs today because I'm planning to give the same message in the Bahamas during the feast. So you're my guinea pigs. Now, if you feel bad that you're a guinea pig, I'm sorry, but at least I didn't call you lab rats. And I hope that no animals will be harmed during the delivery of this message. All right, moving on. We're going to ask the animals, and they will teach us. We can ask the animals, and they will teach us about God's power. Now, this slide has a picture of an owl. Now, I chose this because owls are often known for being wise, and we can gain wisdom for them. I did just a little bit of an internet search to kind of understand why is that. And one of the reasons given that people associate wisdom in owls is because they have large eyes and a large flat face, and people kind of, I guess, thought that they were smart because they sat there. That was one of the reasons given. Now, interestingly, in India, owls are known to be foolish. So if you thought you were giving an Indian person a compliment and said, oh, you're as wise as an owl, they might punch you. Probably not, but it's an interesting thing. So again, by asking the animals, by observing and thinking about the animals, we can learn about God's power. God's power is on display in the animals that he made and how incredible power and powerful the animals are and how he has control over the animals. Animals are featured throughout another psalm or a psalm that I'll turn to, Psalms 104. So we're going to look at a few verses there. I mentioned Proverbs 30 talks a lot about animals. Psalms 104 is another psalm and another chapter that talks a lot about animals. This psalm is actually a really great song, a psalm to be considering. It is a prayer praising and glorifying God. It's an excellent example to learn how to glorify God in our prayers. And animals are featured throughout this psalm. Over the course of 11 verses, seven different animals are featured, talking about God's character and also his power. So we'll look at a few verses here, and then we'll come back to this a little bit later in the message. Psalms 104, and starting in verse 24. Verse 24 says, O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them. The earth is full of your possessions. Verse 25, the great and wide sea in which are innumerable teeming things, living things, both small and great. There the ships sail about. There is that Leviathan which you have made to play there. These all wait for you, that you may give them food in due season. What you give them, they gather in. You open your hand, and they are filled with good. You hide your face, they are troubled. You take away their breath, they die and return to the dust. You send forth your spirit, they are created, and you renew them on the face of the earth. This is how powerful God is. And in the middle of this passage, it's an interesting, I guess, at the beginning of verse 29, it says, if you hide your face from the animals, they are troubled. The animals know that they depend on God in some way or another. And of course, we are in trouble too if God ever were to hide his face from us. Leviathan is mentioned in this, and it's mentioned of five times throughout the Bible. It's never translated. I looked through the various translations to see, did somebody try to guess what a Leviathan is? And I couldn't find anywhere as far as what a Leviathan might be. It's described in various places as a sea creature, a reptile, a serpent, and having many heads. What an unusual animal. Are there Leviathans still living in the ocean and we haven't come across them? Have they died out? What is this? This is a picture on this slide of a giant squid. Now, I'm not intending or trying to say that this giant squid is a Leviathan. I don't think that it is. It doesn't make sense. But it is an incredible sea creature. Squid have been, both in reality and in folklore, formidable creatures. They're known in many legends as the Kraken, and they're mentioned in books like Moby Dick and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Squid sometimes are known even to wrestle with whales. I don't know why they choose to do that, but they're quite amazing and powerful animals, and God made them. As big and impressive as some of these animals are, they were made by God. These two horses, I think, I don't know if these are Clydesdales. We might refer to them as draft horses. I kind of forced this into the message because I thought it was really interesting. I heard this, I think, at a sermon during the feast at Orange Beach, but the speaker talked about these horses. So a single draft horse can pull up to 6,000 pounds. So let me test your math here. One draft horse can pull 6,000 pounds. How much can two draft horses pull? 12,000, right? That's the simple math, but the truth is they can pull much more. Two draft horses together are known to pull up to 18,000 pounds. So somehow they are able to work together, almost encouraging each other to do a little more and go more, and they can do 1.5 times what they could do by themselves. Just thinking about this a little bit, humans can do a lot in human terms. But if we use God's power that he has given to us, we can do incredible things. God used animals to describe his power. So we humans are trying to think, what is God's power like? How can the writers of the Bible talk about this to us and we can learn from this? So in a number of different passages, God said things like, I am like a certain animal. And we can see how, at least in somewhat human terms, a little bit insight, we can get a little bit of insight into God's power. I won't ask you to turn here, but Numbers 23, verse 22 says that he has the strength of a wild ox. Oxen are very powerful. Wild ones must be even more. That's one way God's strength was described. In Job, again, we won't turn here, but Job chapters 40 and verses 40, and chapter 40 and chapter 41, God tells Job, consider these amazing animals. He said, consider the behemoth and the leviathan. And he said, look at how incredible these huge animals are. And God says, these are nothing compared to me. The behemoth, by the way, has been translated and speculated to be a hippopotamus. So God's can tell us a little bit about his power through these incredible, powerful animals that he has made. God also has command over the animals. He controls them. We read already about how the animals look to him for food and for care and for air. Throughout the Bible, God controlled the animals. He had the birds feed Elijah. He had Balaam's donkey speak. The lions, he controlled the lions. He told them when to attack and when not to, or when not to attack Daniel, when to attack the other princes or governors at that time. God controls all of the animals. He has no trouble controlling things around our lives, and if we trust him, he's in control. These examples of what he did with the animals are a way for us to understand his power. Let's look at Hosea. Hosea chapter 13. Again, considering God's power and how the animals teach us about God's power. So we'll look at Hosea 13 and we'll read verses 7 and 8. Hosea 13, verses 7 and 8. So I will be to them like a lion, like a leopard by the road, I will lurk. I will meet them like a bear deprived of her cubs. I will tear open their rib cage, and there I will devour them like a lion. The wild beast shall tear them. So we've all heard about bears, and if you see a bear cub, get away, because the mother bear is probably nearby, and you do not want to mess with that. And God is like a mother bear, at least in human terms. That's how powerful he is. How easily it is for a bear to tear through another animal or a person if needed. That's a way to consider God's power. So through the animals, we can ask, and they will teach us about God's power. And then the next question that they're going to inform us on is God's character. We can ask the animals, and they will teach us about God's character. At the back of the room, by the way, I made a list. I have a copy on both sides and another copy, but I made a list of all the animals that I could find in the Bible. I don't know why I do these things. I can't help myself. But there are, so it's actually not that easy to do. We have various translations. I found various lists from various websites, and I did my own. My list has 121 animals on here. Now, this list is not right. I know there are mistakes and it's incomplete, but some of the things like animal, the word animal is in the Bible. Does that count as an animal or not? That's one item on the list. Or flock, or creature, monster, dragon, these are things. And then, at least in some cases, when there weren't that many references to a particular animal, I actually listed the verses where you can find them, but there were 100, the bird is mentioned 124 times. I did not type out 124 references to birds. And again, this is not as easy as it seemed because there are words, animals like bear. So you do a search on the Bible of bear, but there's often bear up someone's burden. That's not a reference to an animal. So wasn't quite, it took a little bit of time. Anyway, you're welcome to have a look at this after services if you'd like. You're welcome even to take the list away if you have any interest. Coming back, all right. My tiger is back. Another one of my favorite animals. Tigers are just so incredible and beautiful, but they're also a little intimidating. We went, my family went to a wild animal park quite a few years ago. McKinley and Kennedy were riding in a little red wagon, literally. We had them as we walked through the park. It wasn't last week. There was a tiger in a cage. In this cage, I can't remember for sure, but maybe it was bars, maybe it was glass, probably bars, but I was pulling the wagon with McKinley and Kennedy. They were probably two or three years old. And this tiger was on the other side of the bars, and it was just, with its cold eyes, were just staring at my twins in the wagon. And I'm standing there, and I start to get weak in my heart, literally. Like, I got nervous, just the power of this animal. And I left with the wagon and the twins. I didn't run away myself, but incredible. Let's look at Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. Romans 1 and verse 20. Again, for some reason or another, I picked the NIV. I thought it read very nicely here. It says, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. Through everything that God made, his invisible qualities can be seen." So certainly as we're talking about animals, we can see God's invisible qualities through the animals that he created. There are things that we can see, and we'll look at a few of these examples, but humility, self-sacrifice, courage, a protecting nature, caring, peace, and joy. All of these things the Bible teaches us about God through animals. We'll start with humility. And the donkey, of course, there's a famous event that happened with Jesus where he was brought in on a donkey. He came into the city. Let's look at Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9. This is where this was prophesied, of course, in Matthew, and it's Matthew 21:7 where we can read about where it actually happened. Zechariah 9, verse 9. It says, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. He is just and having salvation." You know, if we pause here, we might think, he's coming how? He's coming with majesty and power. But it says, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey, not even a full-grown donkey he's coming on. As I was considering this, I compared this to Haman. Do you remember Haman from the book of Esther? Haman, how did he want to come into the city? The king said, "Haman, we're gonna praise and honor somebody." And of course, Haman thought it was going to be him. So what did he ask for? He went to the king and said, "King, I am just your humble servant. Just put me on a donkey and I will go in the city." No, he asked to be put on the king's horses and to be ride around. He wanted people in front of the horses shouting what a great person he is. Certainly Christ deserves that kind of an entry, but what did he show? He showed humility by riding on the foal of a donkey. And of course, he is also often compared to a lamb. He's compared to a lamb because he is a sacrifice. He sacrificed himself for all of us. This is an incredible symbol. Of course, not to be forgotten, he is also the Lion of Judah. We can learn about his character by considering that he is the Lion of Judah. Revelation 5, verse 5. Revelation chapter 5, verse 5. This passage says, "But one of the elders said to me, 'Do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its seven seals.'" So how about this passage? We're all familiar with this. Jesus looking out over the city, and he showed how much he cared and how much he wanted to protect his people. He used the hen, and he said, "I would just like to gather you up like a hen gathers her chicks under her wings." Shows how he is protecting and how he cares for all of us. Another article I came across is titled, "The Hen is a Symbol of Motherhood for Reasons We May Have Forgotten, So Let Us Recall." This was written by a woman named Karen Davis. And in this article, she talks about this, how hens are very protective and how we can learn from that. And it's interesting, throughout history, the hen and the imagery of a hen protecting her chicks has been noticed. In the first century, according to this article, the Greek historian Plutarch praised the many ways in which hens cherish and protect their chicks. It says, quoting, "drooping their wings for some to creep under and receiving with joyous and affectionate clucks, others mount upon their backs and run up from every direction. And though they flee, hens, and though hens flee from dogs and snakes if they are frightened only for themselves, if their fright is for their children, they will stand their ground and fight beyond their strength." That's what a hen will do for its chick. A few centuries later, Renaissance writer Ulysses Aldrovandi describes chickens and hens. It says, "At the first sight of a predator, mother hens will immediately gather their chicks under the shadow of their wings, and with the covering put up such a very fierce defense, striking fear into their opponent in the midst of a frightful clamor, using both wing and beak. They would rather die for their chicks than seek safety in flight." The author of this article, Karen Davis, witnessed this herself. She had a hen and some chicks in her backyard, and the dog came along. And when the dog came near, now you consider a dog versus a chicken. Who's going to win that fight? Seems like a dog's got a pretty big advantage. And the chicken should run away. The hen should run away. He can't stand up in front of a dog. But in this, what this woman saw, the author saw, was that said that when the dog came near, the hen, with her wings outspread, curved menacingly, rushed at the dog over and over, cackling loudly, while she continued to push her chicks behind herself with her wings. We can learn from the hen about how Jesus wants to protect and care for us. The Bible tells us that, as we read in both Matthew and Luke. And we can observe the chicken and the hen and how she protects her chicks. This is what Jesus is doing for us symbolically. God cares for his animals. Let's go back to Psalms chapter 104. And we're going to read several verses here. We'll start in verse 10, and we'll read all the way down to verse 21. Again, this chapter is a chapter praising God and glorifying God, and animals are used to help us understand better. Psalms 104, verse 10. And just consider, as we read through these passages, how God cares for his animals. And if he's caring for his animals, what will he do for us? Verse 10 says, "He sends the springs into the valleys. They flow through the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. Wild donkeys quench their thirst. And by them the birds of heaven have home. They sing among the branches. He causes grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation for the service of men, that he may bring forth food from the earth. The trees of the Lord are full of sap. The cedars of Lebanon he planted." Verse 17, "Where the birds make their nests, the stork has her home in the fir trees. The high hills are for the wild goats. The cliffs are a refuge for the rock badgers." Verse 20, "And you made the darkness and its night, and in which all the beasts of the forest creep about. The young lions roar after their prey and seek food from their God." Here we can see that God is taking care of the animals. And of course, he will care for us. There's a famous example we can look at in Matthew. Matthew chapter 10, verse 29 through 31 talks about the sparrow. This is, I believe, a picture of a sparrow, and you can see the sparrow in someone's hand, and just illustrates how tiny the sparrow is. Matthew chapter 10, verse 29. This says, "Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are numbered. Do not fear, therefore, You are of more value than many sparrows. So God knows about these tiniest of creatures. And when we think about if God is caring for these smallest of things, how much does he care about us? And how much does he know about us? And is he ready to protect and care for us? We can also learn about joy through the animals. Otters there in the bottom left of the picture, they're known for being playful creatures. You can observe the otters, and it just seems like they're having so much fun playing around. In the other side on the bottom is a bear cub. How often do we see, have we had a chance to see bear cubs playing? Growing up, I used to watch, The Wild Kingdom with Merlin Olsen. You'd often show animals and the cubs, whether it was bears or some other animal, you could see them playing and frolicking around, and they looked like they were having a ball. Like that is fun. There's joy there in God's creation. I don't know how you can look at that monkey and not think there's some joy, some humor in there. And of course, many of you experience the joy of playing with your dogs. Sorry, not in my house. We don't have dogs. Job chapter 40 and verse 20. We're getting close to an end here. Job chapter 40 and verse 20. Again, there is joy in God's creation. We can look at the animals and often find joy. Job 40, verse 20 says, "Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there." The beasts of the field are playing. God wants us to have joy. He made that as part of his creation, and we can see that. We can learn about God through these animals. So again, by considering the animals that he made, we can gain more of appreciation for God's character. We can learn more about him and understand him more if we think about the animals that he created. So these are the four things that I picked out for this message that we can ask the animals and learn about. We can learn life lessons through the animals. We can learn that God is a great creator. We can learn God's power, and we can learn about his character. So we'll close out where we started in Job chapter 12, and we'll read verses 7 through 10 again. "But ask the animals, and they will teach you, or the birds in the sky, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you." I'm going to pause here for briefly. This says, this is an interesting point. "Speak to the earth, and it will teach you." Now, I did not cover the earth in this message. I covered the animals. My wife, a week or so ago, heard a message by a pastor who spoke to the earth, so to speak, in his message, and asked what the earth could learn from him. In fact, he was very innovative in his message. He interviewed the earth. I don't know if he used this passage or not, but when I read this, in remembering what Stacy had told me, I thought about this. He asked the earth, and it was teaching him. So if you're interested in hearing that message, you can ask Stacy where to find it. But there is another connection here in that the message I'm giving today on the animals, the idea came from a message that I heard probably 6 or 8 years ago in Hawaii, where this same person, the same pastor, gave a message on animals. And I couldn't find this. I wanted to find this on the internet somewhere, but I could not find it. But he was certainly the inspiration for this message. Anyway, going back to this passage. "But ask the animals, they will teach you, or the birds in the sky, and they will tell you, or speak to the earth, and it will teach you, or let the fish of the sea inform you. Which of all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In his hand is the life of every creature and the breath of all mankind. Ask the animals, and they will teach you."